everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Upzoned, a Strongtowns podcast where every week we take just one story from the news that touches the Strongtowns conversation and we upzone it. My name is Kia and I am here with my pal Chuck. How are you doing today, Chuck?
Hey, doing fantastic. It's a beautiful day here. How about you?
It's doing okay. We're in the 45 degree weather, which is like perfect running weather. I know Minnesotans are like cackling when in the distance when I say things like that.
We're going to have a couple days here above zero, which is going to be nice.
I know. You just lay out in your bikinis on the front yard, I guess, in that weather. Well, I spent some time in northern Michigan, so I know and feel your pain, and I am unlike you in that I consider it pain. So I'm excited to jump in and talk about this week's article, which actually you brought to my attention, Chuck. It's a little bit different than usual. So why don't you kick us off and tell us about this piece from Evo?
I have no clue who Evo is. It's something out of the UK. I mean, it's a ridiculously short article. It's like five paragraphs. But it says that sitting among a range of new safety features for all new cars, mandatory speed limiters in the next 3 years across the European Union. A speed limiter is exactly what it sounds. Basically, there's a GPS thing in your car. It determines where you're at in relationship to basically what the speed of the street is from a regulatory standpoint, and it doesn't let you drive over that speed limit. You can drive over that speed limit, but you get what it sounds like is you get that like dinging noise that you get when like you don't put your seatbelt on now. And after you do it a certain number of times, it like won't let you do it anymore. It actually like throttles you down and doesn't let you do it. This is going to be on all cars. The one they use in this article here is a Ford Focus, which is an American, you know, car. They have to have this when they go over and sell them in Europe. And I want to share this because I think it's a fascinating idea, and I wonder how it would translate to here.
It's an interesting article, and it, you know, it brings to mind lots of articles we get sent now and then about, you know, so you want to slow the cars, can't you do it this way? Do we really need to change our road design? So you want to, for instance, make it so fewer people die in high-speed car crashes, wouldn't driverless cars, like with advanced safety features that sense a pedestrian coming on, do the same thing? Does this article feel different than most of the here's a new techie solution to the thing that we're trying to fix by just building more sensible roads?
It does a little bit to me. It's something that I've talked about in theory with a handful of people, but I've always rejected it and rejected it from just like a cultural standpoint as like not, and I want to talk about this, you know, not possible here as a solution to any of this problem. But in Europe, where the relationship with the automobile is quite a bit different than we have here, if this article is real, they're actually going forward with it. And from a technical solution standpoint, I'm sure there are things that are going to be hitches and things that will be tricky about it. What do you do with new streets? What do you do with streets where the speed limit has changed? How do you update these? What about older vehicles? You know, what about aftermarket modifications? Are those going to be a lot? There's a bunch of different things. From a practical standpoint, this would actually limit speeds in a way that could be done quickly and universally. I find myself saying, could this work?
I mean, it's a tricky question, right? I mean, and this goes back to kind of what's tricky about Strongtown's whole hashtag slow the cars bit, which is that the reason we want to slow the cars is kind of twofold. One of which is, we think, really important on its face. One of which is more about our core message of financial strength. The important on its face, obviously, is that when you hit someone in your car going over 25 miles an hour, they are less likely to die than if you hit them going 50 miles an hour, you know, like the fatality rate rises. So slowing the cars literally saves lives of pedestrians, cyclists, and drivers, frankly. The other reason, and this is something that obviously a speed limiter wouldn't touch, though I guess, you know, now that I think about it, maybe there's like some indirect way it would impact it, is that when we build our roads for high speeds, we build more asphalt, we build giant lanes that are forgiving of driver mistakes, and we saddle our communities with long-term maintenance obligations that they don't necessarily have the ability to afford. We don't do the math. That's our other hashtag, do the math. So when you hear about this, Chuck, what do you think the implications are for our financial strength? Do you think people would be less likely to drive if they knew they couldn't speed down the highway without something blaring in their ear? Would that like have like a second order effect over time of discouraging auto dependency in our places?
That I don't know. I don't know, because people drive today at times and in places when it's ridiculously wasteful of their time. So the fact that, you know, they would have to drive a little bit slower, I don't actually think changes the travel time as much. And I don't think it's going to like frustrate people in that way. I think it's going to frustrate them in other ways. Slower speeds won't change travel time if you manage the intersections. And in most cases, it won't change the travel time significantly for local trips at all. And so, I don't see that. I don't see that happening. And I don't see that being the problem. Interestingly, and you brought up the financial aspect of this, I think one of the things that this would do, let's say that this were widespread adopted in this country, and in 10 years, 90% of vehicles were, you know, or let's say even like 70% of vehicles were like this here in the US. I think the thing that we find right away is how bizarrely wide our streets are. When I was in the Army, I was a truck driver. Like, that was my job. I joined when I was 17, still in high school, and during college, and then right after college, I was a weekend warrior truck driver. There were these roads on post, and understand, like military roads, you think our streets are bizarrely wide. I mean, just like take whatever standard you have and make it military, which is, you know, double it in size. And I mean, you basically had like an airport landing strip that you were driving down, but they would do the opposite. For speed limits, they would knock them way down. So we had this one road on post, and it had to have been like 6 miles straight. You know, you could have landed a C-130 down this thing and two at a time, side by side. But they had the speed limit set at 15. So you're driving along in this, like I had like a Chevy Suburban kind of thing that I drove. And I also had a Hummer that I drove a little bit. You'd be driving these things that were capable of going really fast, and you'd have to put them in first gear. And even then, like tap the brakes every now and then, because they would idle at speeds that were faster than what the speed limit I was on the road. It was the most surreal, ridiculous feeling. I think if we force people to do this on streets, take these high performance vehicles that were capable of going 100, you know, miles an hour, throttle them way back, and then go really slow down these streets, people are going to look around and have the same feeling like, what the heck am I doing? Basically, why am I sitting here in this high performance space with my performance like throttled way, way, way back? And maybe that would prompt us to de-engineer or engineer to the capacity we want instead of the capacity that the maximum kind of performance. I don't know. That's a big question that I've got.
It's an interesting question, and it reminds me a little bit of, you know, have you ever done like the snapshot device from your insurance, that little like thingamabob they have you plug into your car to tell you if you're going too fast, and every time it beeps, it like knocks a few dollars off your discount for your next insurance policy. I had to do that one.
I have not. That would be fun.
It's not fun because first, it's wrong. Like it gets mad at you when you accelerate too fast out of a stop, but its notion of too fast is wrong in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
I found it such a frustrating experience, you know, because it was a feedback mechanism about my speed and about my car handling abilities. I will say for the record that I've never had an at-fault accident. I'm a very good driver, according to most metrics, that I didn't go with that insurance company in the future because I didn't like being yelled at by a machine constantly. On the flip side, I have a natural speed limiter on my primary vehicle now because my primary vehicle is my body. I bike and I walk. I can't go 100 miles an hour no matter how hard I try. And that feedback mechanism doesn't bother me because I'm enjoying the act of transportation in lots of other ways. The feedback mechanisms I don't like when I'm riding my bike or walking down the street is when a car drives really close to me, and there's nothing I can do about that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I would much rather have the speed limiter on my lungs or my like musculature. I'm not an athletic cyclist by any stretch of the imagination. I've been known to call myself a person on a bike rather than a cyclist, like a normal human adult, than any kind of device embedded in my Toyota that yells at me when I try to pass another car.
we did a project once for a city back when I worked for the engineering firm here in town. And it was one of these just dumb things that they had come up with an ordinance or a rule, and they felt they had to go out and look at every street that had a curve and decide whether it should be have signage or not on the slow down sharp curve. And so my job was to go out with this meter and basically drive all these streets at the speed limit at 30 miles an hour and see whether this like meter thing beeped. And you mentioned the insurance company, and it jogged this memory in my mind because I remember being completely baffled. I mean, at the time I was like 22, and when you're a 20-year-old man, you're kind of reckless behind the wheel anyway. There's a thing where like your eyes and your brain, you kind of process things very quickly. So you tend to like maximize the performance. And I find as a 45-year-old man, I don't process things as quickly. And so I've tended to drive slower now. But back then I remember I had to drive 30, and it was really hard to do on some of these bizarrely wide streets. And you'd go around these corners, and of course the thing wouldn't go off because there's, these broad sweeping corners. And I remember the handful of times that it did just being like celebratory, like amazed, like, yes, I found a street that needed a warning sign, that you should slow down from 30 miles an hour going around it. What we have done is we have made driving such a kind of mindless activity, one that, requires the reptilian part of your brain, not like the active part of your brain for the most part. And introducing this kind of thing, this kind of, throttle back, this limiter, to me, it's a fascinating social experiment more than an engineering one. If we could throttle down vehicles so they could not physically go over the speed limit, that would indefinitely make streets safer. I don't think there's any argument that that would make streets safer. I think the interesting question for me is, what would it do to us? Like, how would we react to it as humans? And I think that there would be a certain level of, and I think people would call this like road rage, but it's not. I think it's a natural cognitive breakdown mechanism, especially if you are running late for something or on a street at 1 a.m, which I find myself a lot, where there's like nobody else there. Basically, you've been given all this capacity for high performance, and then it's artificially throttled back. You have a wide street, you have sweeping corners, you have straight lanes, you have a vehicle with high horsepower and high capacity, you have wide clear zones, you have very, open distances where you can see a long ways. You can look and like your mental acuity tells you, I can go faster, but the thing is throttled back so you can't. How would people deal with that? I think some people would accept it and just be like, okay, this is what we need to do for safety. The same way some people accept traffic signals, there's like, okay. But I think there would be kind of like a cognitive breakdown among some people, like just like an outrage. Like, I will not do this.
Well, we have examples of this in the form of like, every time you install I wrote an article about this for the site, some sort of traffic calming furniture on a street that didn't have it before, people get pissed.
You flipped out, like, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote an article about, they call them the Compton spheres. You can tell what spheres is a euphemism for. They're these gigantic concrete spheres on the corners of what used to be a pretty high speed corridor in order to slow people down. And people are still mad at the older person who was responsible for these, like they've become like kind of, an albatross for her as she pursues re-election. I love them. And the reason why is because people say, like, I should be able to make this turn faster. They slow me down. It's frustrating. And everyone in my circle is like, that's the point. That's really good that that's what's happening. They are working. And the fact that, like, what we are doing is annoying you is okay, because you're not killing anybody at the same time. People really profoundly rejected. Now, if we installed Compton spheres on every corner in St. Louis, would people get used to it over time? I don't know. I've asked myself that question a lot. Like, is what annoys people about slowing down their cars the knowledge that they could go faster just a street further over? Or if you lived in a city where the speed limit was both posted and the effective speed limit, the speed that you actually naturally like feel safe going at a very low rate, would people just drive around angry all the time, or would they eventually accustom themselves to it? I wonder about this, you know, like I've never driven in my lifetime in a city that was like the latter. I wonder what it would look like.
To me, this has always been one of the fascinating things about automated vehicles. The proponents of it say, well, it'll be safer. But what they actually are like envisioning is a much quicker commute where they don't have to drive, where they can, you know, legally look at their phone and you know, read the news or do whatever, watch a movie or what have you. And that's the vision, is like, I can get to where I want to go faster, safer, and in more convenience. And I've always found that fascinating, because automated vehicles will have to follow the rules of the road. They will be required to. And in many ways, that is going to frustrate the heck out of people. It's going to just annoy them. I'll refer to this book. There's a book by John Adams called Risk. John Adams is a UK behavioral scientist. He has looked at risk compensation. So when you make an improvement, like put seatbelts in a vehicle, does it actually make people safer? And he has, through looking at statistics, and these are highly debated by the advocates, but not really by people who have gone through and looked at the stuff he has, he's shown how seatbelt laws actually make the roads less safe, actually lead to higher rates of death. And like, how can that possibly be? I mean, I would not get in a car without a seatbelt. I would not go somewhere without a seatbelt. How can that possibly be? And what he has demonstrated, and you can think of this as, you know, what is the safest, if we wanted to lower injuries in a football game, what would we do? Well, we wouldn't give people more padding. We would give them less padding. Because if they have less padding, they're less likely to hit each other hard. It's the adding on padding that makes the collisions even more extreme. So when you make improvements to vehicles that are designed to improve safety, what human beings tend to do is to not take that as a safety improvement, but to take it as a performance improvement. In other words, you drive faster, you drive more, you drive in times and in places where you otherwise wouldn't.
You think you have a larger margin for error and risk.
Exactly.
Yeah, you exploit it.
Exactly. So what would happen if, from a human psychology standpoint, if we did the opposite? In other words, we gave you all this capacity and your natural tendency is to use it, because you have the safety margin you're comfortable with, is basically to go up to that safety margin again and basically get way more performance out of what we have designed and engineered, but we artificially throttle it way back. I think we would have social revolution. I mean, I really do. I'll be interested to see what happens in Europe. Maybe they, you know, have a different relationship with the automobile and they are fine with this. I think we would see not only like riots and, you know, burning down City Hall and what have you. I'm hardly joking. I think you would see a huge aftermarket. Basically, people would go in and get this taken out, you know.
I think it'll vary based on which part of the country it would be implemented in, right? Like the people in, you know, Italy who are used to driving around, you know, this is where I'm seeing a hypothesis based on what I said I didn't understand earlier. I'm just going to throw out a guess that if you're driving around Italy where the streets were designed for like single horse carriages, like you probably will be like, oh, okay, this is the speed I usually drive in the center of Rome rather than, and I'm just kind of going that speed. I think in America, we have a few corners of our places that have been preserved in this traditional development style. And the people who live there, I think, will not be leading the revolution. But the people who live in Phoenix and Houston and outer ring suburbs of St. Louis, Missouri, where I live in the inner ring, in the inner city, but they will probably be the ones freaking out the hardest. That would be my guess.
Yeah. I mean, I look out my window here at the street in front of my place. I mean, it's engineered for very fast speeds. I mean, you could easily, comfortably drive 35, 40 miles an hour down this residential street and not as a driver feel any insecurity, really. And for the most part, you would be completely safe. It's the random, you know, incident that is going to be the problem. And they are, by definition, rather random. So you could drive it down the street and 99% of the time not have any problem at all. Are you going to be willing to sacrifice all of that capacity in the name of, you know, safety? Studies of human behavior show the answer to that is no. this thing in Europe is one way to accomplish it. And I'm going to be fascinated to see how it works out.
Same. Let's go to the down zone now, Chuck. I'm curious to hear about what you've been reading, what you've been watching, listening to. Doesn't have to have anything to do with the Strong Towns conversation, but just for fun, if anyone's looking for something enjoyable or thought-provoking, what would you recommend to them?
As you know, I've been working on this project that we are yet to announce that we will announce.
I know,
soon.
It's killing me.
I was up till 4 in the morning last night, getting so close. Okay, so I have this teenage daughter, and her propensity is to lock herself in her room when she gets home. And my goal as a dad is to draw her out. And usually that means I get yelled at. but I try to, especially this last Sunday, she's up in her room. I'm texting her like, hey, come on down. Hey, dad. And I got her to watch another episode of Sherlock with me, which I've kind of got her into it now. She's liking it. So it's one of those father-daughter things that I've been able to get out of the room. We sit together on the couch. We watch it. We chat about it a little bit. I'll pause it every now and then and make sure, like, you're hanging with me, like, you got any questions, and then we keep going. It's a lot of fun to share that with her, and she's responding well to it.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for the parenting update. I have a suggestion that she might also enjoy. It's a rated PG-13 movie. I just went to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and loved it. It was cool. So good. Have you seen it yet?
No, it was here and I didn't make it.
Well, it'll be out on rental, I think, probably now or very soon, if not. I saw it in like the last little blip. I could see it in St. Louis the morning before the Oscars because I was trying to cram the last few in. And I'm not usually one for like live action superhero movies or even like animated superhero movies because I just have like a weird aversion to like orchestrated fight scenes with 50 people and tons of explosions. It's just the superhero genre is not made for me. But I love comic books. I think comic books are amazing and beautiful and art-driven and cool. And the way that they tell stories is fascinating. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is a superhero movie that looks and feels and acts like a comic book, but still uses a lot of the fluidity and potential of the filmic form. It was so good and so funny and so delightful and such a good message. So everybody go watch that. I'm not going to even try to link it back to Strong Towns because it's just that good. It's worth it.
I have had this vision, and it happens every year at when we do the Academy Awards too, because I love movies and I know you love movies too. And
oh, yeah.
I've actually had fun going to a movie with you.
A terrible movie.
It was a bad movie, and that's what made it even more fun, I think.
We saw The Purge. Was it election year? No, it was the first Purge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the best.
I had no idea what I was getting into. And throughout the whole thing, I'm like, seriously? Like, what? Okay, so here's my vision. I would like to someday do a podcast series where we went to movies and then we talked about the representation of the built form, like in the movie. It's fascinating to me as someone who obsesses about this and who is very like finely in tune with it, the way that artists, you know, directors and producers, the way that they visualize space and share that in a movie. There's a trick and an art to it that I don't understand. But on the other side, I do understand the space very well. And the way that they use the background, the scenery, the design, the layout to evoke certain feelings and certain representations, good and bad, claustrophobic, joy. I would love to share that with people because I think it would make the movie experience even better for people like us who kind of love this stuff. So maybe someday we can make that a bit we do.
I like that bit. And you would like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse for that reason, because it is set in like a multiverse where there are like seven different New York cities. And it's really interesting from that perspective. But I don't want to make this podcast go on for an hour. Let's wind down. Thank you so much for listening to Upzoned. If you want to weigh in on our thought experiments today, you can email us at team@strongtowns.org. You want to support the show, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes or the platform of your choice. And you can always join the Strong Strongtowns Movement at strongtowns.org/membership. One last plug. We are getting close to our deadline for the Strongest Town contest. That is Sunday, March 10th is your deadline to get your nominations in. Go to strongtowns.org/strongesttown. No surprise on that URL. To nominate your city, you don't have to be the mayor of that city in order to do that. You can be an average city citizen who just loves their place. Thanks so much for listening in, and keep doing what you can to build a strong town.